Welcome to New Realities and New Realities Radio here on BBS.com. This is Alan Steinfeld, and I've been hosting the show for the last few weeks, and tonight we have a very special guest. Along with the last few weeks, the theme has really been about how to give back to the planet, how to create new realities from a collective consciousness. And 2 weeks ago, if you've been listening, I talked to people who had an organization called Barak in Africa, West Africa, kind of saving the indigenous cultures there. And last week, I interviewed William Marks about the World Water Projects and the value of fresh water around the planet. And this week, I have a very special guest, an old friend of mine, Kira Kay, who has an organization in Nepal called Hands Helping Hands. And she really has devoted her life to giving back to people who really need it, and especially in Nepal, especially in a country that doesn't have the abundant wealth that is here, and people are suffering economically. She's instituted programs that have made a difference and are making a difference, and she'll be talking about that. And also, in terms of the theme of this show, which is about consciousness and opening up spiritually, she very much ties those efforts into the idea of consciousness and how we are evolving as a planetary race. So thank you, Kira.
Thanks, Alan. It's great to be here with you.
I mean, I've known you a long time.
Yes, you have.
And I know in the past few years you've really devoted your life to this. Do you want to just tell us what you do and actually how you got started going to Nepal and finding out what's not wrong, but how you can help?
I'd love to, Alan, because, I mean, this is actually a big part of what I feel I'm doing now in the big picture point of view, what you talk about, the consciousness, and why I was happy to talk with you today, because what started for me, so I'll share more of my story because it probably will be the starting point.
Yeah, and for people to relate into it, to hook in, who may just be hearing it, how do you get involved in a global...
Exactly,
project?
And I think this is something that will probably resonate for many people, is, you know, more and more we hear about, you know, the mess that the planet's in, and then the question is, well, what do we do? And then it comes back, and this was true for me, was, well, what can I do? I can't do much. What's the point? And this feeling of helplessness with that. And combined with that, feeling the pressure that I should do something. And so one day I just thought, you know, I'm just going to do something. And I'd been running a meditation group for a longer time by donation on a Monday night. And I decided that I'd try and do something constructive with the money I'd collected. And I had about $350. And I'd heard from a friend of a friend about an orphanage in Nepal. And so I got on a plane.
You never went to Nepal before?
I'd been before about 6 years previous. Uh-huh. So I was aware that there was a lot of poverty there.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't really know anything. I didn't really know anybody. I had the name of this orphanage. And I just went. I got on a plane and I went. And my first experience was disastrous. I arrived at this orphanage. It was very obvious. There was quite a lot of financial corruption. There was abuse with the children. This was not my ideal circumstance, and I felt very helpless. Through this, I met some Nepali people who were really trying to make a difference in their way. And I started, you know, conversing with them, and I came back a year later, and one of them came to me with the idea of what he called a self-sustaining orphanage. And when he shared the idea, I thought, that can't work, it's not possible, with my mental image of what an orphanage is. And the idea is having enough land, or getting capital to have enough land, to have a building, to have enough land for growing vegetables, a cow or a buffalo, some other income-producing type produce, you know, goats, chickens, fish farm, beehive, mushroom growing, to give the home enough stability so they have their own food production, what they grow for themselves, and a bit of income source for extras that they don't grow. And it also involves the women who have perhaps lost their husband or their husband's left them and they have a child to raise, they become the live-in carers.
Mm.
And then Nepali volunteers in the local village become the mentors who support in the overseeing the activities, giving guidance and giving obviously the practical advice and the network for different supplies and different support. And I supported Dipendra, my friend, Nepali friend, with his idea.
This was an original idea to be self-sufficient as a sort of organization.
As an orphanage,
to be self-sufficient.
And the reality is they're not fully self-sufficient, but they are the primary basis. So if there was no donations ever to come in, that they would actually be able to provide the food and a very basic subsistence living. And this is a very different perspective than the normal institutional models.
That get money from the government, is that what you're saying?
In Nepal there isn't a structure in like we have in the West where we have institutions and there's special funding for institutions like orphanages. Mm-hmm. In places like Nepal, in India, most of Africa, most of South America, there isn't that type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
So it relies on aid organizations or individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And for most situations, we still think in the old paradigm of the more institutional-based,
right,
donor-funded, in some respects hierarchical organization of an orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
Someone sets it up, they're the founders, they're the donors. If something should happen to them, everything crumbles down. Dipendra had seen this, my Nepali friend had seen this happen a lot in Nepal, and because of the civil unrest they'd had in the country over a number of years, he'd also seen a lot of disruption had happened for the children.
Mm.
And so his idea was to create things so that they're more organic and more self-sufficient.
Mm.
The first one now is 4.5 years old,
mm,
and we have 3 in operation now. We're about to start the 4th.
Four orphanages?
4 orphanages.
Uh-huh. Of how many children?
They have up until 20. We keep it up to 20 so they can stay sustainable. The most recent one, which is almost a year old, we have 14 children because it takes time to build up to, a working level. And we're about to start the 4th one in October.
Is there a reason there's orphans in Nepal? Is there a reason for about the economy? I mean, there's orphans everywhere, but is there something about Nepal?
One thing has been over the last 12 years, it's recently become more settled, but there had been a lot of civil unrest.
Mm-hmm.
That has changed, but the disruption of families, also the poverty, has meant that there is a lot of deaths of one family member. And there is also still the reality that with lack of education, lack of facilities, families end up being larger than they can actually provide for. So there is also the what are not necessarily orphans in the sense of having lost parents, but the families can't provide for them.
And so also there's a problem in Nepal with child workers because there's so many children. And are you working with that kind of cause as well?
I'm not working directly with that. Uh-huh. But one of the things that I'm doing with the organization that I've helped set up, Hands with Hands,
uh-huh,
is to help link with other like-minded organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the principles for me isn't about doing good.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how can we as individuals make a difference by feeling inside us, what are we drawn to do? So I was drawn with this idea, and I've also now gotten involved in other projects.
Mm.
Someone else has been drawn, and you know someone who's involved in Nepal around the child welfare.
Yeah.
There are other people in Africa, in India, in various parts in other countries that I'm connecting with now. They're drawn there. They have a feeling. And this, to me, is one of the points that I would love, your listeners and the wider world actually to get more of a handle on is if we all follow our intuitive impulse, we do make a difference to ourselves and to whoever then we're in contact with.
And make a difference, I feel, to these children who may not have had a chance. And one child, you know, could come up with cures for terminal illness. You know, one child is worth everything.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, I've got a very good example of that. One doctor I've met in Nepal, he was sponsored by someone to do his medical training. And he was sponsored and he went to the Ukraine. He then went to Boston and studied pediatric cardiology. He then got a fellowship to Toronto University for further studies in pediatric cardiology. He then decided to go back to Nepal and set up the first heart hospital there. And his name is Bhagawan Kurela, and he is an exceptional being. What he's brought to the hospital system, not just the heart care, but to the hospital system in general in Nepal, is unbelievable. And this is one person who got a chance, exactly as you say.
But what I'm getting from what you're saying is, like, you're an individual, didn't have an organization at all, just went to Nepal with a feeling to give back and help, and you've created something.
Exactly.
If anyone who's listening who gets the impulse, you know, I can go and help people who need something, they can do that.
And the thing is to realize is you don't need to know everything, because none of us ever do, you know, we've discussed.
Yeah.
And for me, it's been a massive learning experience. And what I've realized, my impulse to give and be a support has also been a giving back to myself. I've received so much in terms of what I've learned literally from other people's creativity, their initiatives.
You mean the Nepali?
The Nepali people and other Western people I've met, you know, through, you know, now that I'm involved in this, I tend to meet other like-minded people.
Right.
And, of course, you know, I mean, I have hundreds and hundreds of inspiring stories of people who just decide they want to do something.
Like what? Can you say?
I have one Japanese friend, Mio, who she was 18 at the time when the big earthquakes happened in Turkey.
Uh-huh.
And she just got on a plane and went there. She didn't speak the language. This was back in the early 90s, I think, or mid-90s.
Yeah.
And she just got on a plane and went there. And she didn't speak the language. She didn't have anything. She went to the Japanese embassy.
Uh-huh.
And she just ended up handing out blankets, handing out food, handing out smiles, and she spent several months there. And that was just from an impulse.
Well, what you're saying now, and what I'm getting a bigger picture of, is that we, because of things like the internet and global news, we are now seeing we're all really connected to each
That's
other.
Right.
And we can all make a difference wherever we live in everybody's life. We can come together as one planet.
And the thing is, you know, like some of your listeners may think, oh, well, you know, I don't want to leave my country. And you don't need to. You know, there are numerous opportunities to give.
Right.
Right in your own street. It can be an elderly friend or some, you know, or, you know, a neighbor who you haven't even met before, you know, who might have a handicap or they might be elderly. Just to spend, you know, maybe an hour a week or taking them shopping or, you know, just checking in on them. You know, these types of things, in London, they have, on the Starbucks board, they have these little posters which help organise visiting elderly people in your area and linking you with somebody. You know, I have a friend who's volunteering with an autistic child of a friend of his. You know, so many opportunities. If you just decide to look and say, I want to make a difference, how can I do it?
It's beautiful what you're saying, and I see the chance for really a new planet to come into being that functions on this level.
Well, you know, the name of your program, Alan, the thing you're passionate about is new realities.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, and I really connect with this, and this is why I've set up a website, handswithhands.org, to help be a platform of support.
Yeah.
You know, on one hand, what I'm doing in Nepal feels my personal journey.
Right.
But the whole idea is, how can I support other people to do their thing? So one of those things is we've now got a volunteer program, which is in Nepal, but I'm also now linking with other organizations in India and Guatemala, which is a transparent thing. We, as an organization, don't handle any of the money, but we help connect with other volunteer indigenous organizations to help people go and have an experience. Go and try something.
Yeah, it's about having experience and also benefiting other people. Tell people how to get in touch with you and donations if you want. And
well, first off, they can just go to www.handswithhands.org, all one word, except for the dot before the org, and there'll be information to be able to contact me directly on the contact page.
And do people then, if people want to give donations or volunteer?
The volunteering side is very clear on the website, and there's even a sign-up form now. The donation side, we will have that set up at some point in the near future. So far it's been, and this is another point I've really noticed, is it's not always about money. I mean, of course, in third world countries where, you know, financial capital is really not very present, you know, finances can really and are a very valuable support. But one of the things I've learned is it's not just about money. And the other thing is I've also learned there's a lot of people who have money to give.
Yeah, and they, some of them are happy to give it.
But what I feel is if you're listening and you want to give finances, my guess is you've got a feeling in there to give. Now, my encouragement is don't just look for an organization to give to. Look and feel, how can you get more intimately involved?
Yeah.
So I had a doctor from Australia who decided, he emailed me and he wanted to sponsor a rural hospital project. Coincidentally, an email arrived from my Nepali friends to help translate into English a proposal for a small hospital. That was just over a year ago. The hospital is nearly finished being built. I suggested to the doctor and his wife that they come to Nepal, which they did in March. Because I said, you're making an impact here in this village, and I want you to have an experience to see what it is that's happening, for you to feel, and for them to meet you and to feel, because it's about connection.
Right, it's not just here's the money and do what you want with it, and it's like, it actually connects people even more and the planet more.
Much more, and now what's evolved from this is the doctor was so inspired, and he was very touched by the creativity of the local village and their vision. He's gone back to Australia, and he's now setting up a volunteer program with doctors that he knows to come back and support educating the rural doctors. And that's an initiative that's coming. And this then is not about money. It's about knowledge. It's about connecting. And it's about being with this other community and what he can share of himself, of his knowledge, of his skills, of his background. And this is what I'm trying to convey. It's not just about giving of money.
Right.
Yes, we need that. But the most important thing is giving of yourself.
Right, and this is where it ties in because I'm here with Kira in Harbin Hot Springs, California. I mean, we're here at a workshop which is about consciousness. We're sharing a level of being together which evolves each of us to be with each other in a different way, in a more collective way, in a more giving back way, in a way where we can support each other's vision. I would say that's what we're here to do at this place. So can you talk about, I mean, you sort of did start to talk about that, your projects in terms of consciousness and giving and being with people in a different way. I mean, what are you taking from being wherever we are here and what we're dealing with back to being with people in a different way?
This is a great question, Alan, because this is something I really hope that I can convey not only to your listeners but also to anyone that I meet and anyone who is wanting to give back.
Yeah.
Particularly going to somewhere like a developing country.
Yeah.
Because, you know, often you're dealing with a different culture, a different knowledge base, and what I've seen as a handicap is Western people coming to such a situation with thinking that they know best. And so what I've gained from, you know, these experiences and these workshops is about being more tuned in and more sensitive and being with these people. So when I go out to the villages, I'm with them. We sit down and we drink tea and I'm with them and I hear and I sort of invite, what's their vision? What do they see? What do they feel are their need, you know, here? And how can I be a part of that? And how can we be creative together? So I'm not coming in with a good idea. In fact, most of the time, I don't have an idea. I'm just there and I'm with them. And we just hang out and maybe nothing comes from that meeting. We might come again. And we might just walk for a few days in the mountains, and we might just hang out. And then inspiration might come.
But what, I mean, maybe you can give the listeners a sense of what their reality is like, because the show is new reality. I'm interested in how people live. And so you fly into Kathmandu.
You fly into Kathmandu, and it's a very different experience, just that.
Just the airport. Because I've been to India, and I guess it's similar maybe to India. But
similar but different. The Nepali people are a different race.
Uh-huh.
They're a very transparent people.
Mm.
So you're met with friendly smiles.
Uh-huh.
You're definitely met with a level of chaos, so the immigration and so forth works very differently. But they're looking to support you. They'd love for you to be there.
So when then you go into the villages, I mean, there's a small villages, right?
And there's a number of different villages I go to, so there is different levels of poverty in Nepal.
But it's pretty poor.
And
right?
I mean, in relative and nearly all of the Western people that I've supported to come to Nepal they've never been to a developing country, have initially been very shocked.
Shocked by the poverty.
Shocked by the poverty just in Kathmandu, which is, relative to the rest of Nepal, quite rich. But just in terms of seeing the basic things, seeing the dwellings, seeing, you know, the clothing, you know, things are a very different point of view. In the very remote villages, where we do have some of the microcredit programs going.
Yeah, I want to talk about microcredit.
The standard of living is incredibly survival-based. I mean, they don't have a house. They have what we would call a shack, which might be the size of a king-size bed.
Uh-huh. That's a shack that they live with six children.
The pride that they will show that to you. This is my home, and you know the joy that they're inviting you in, and you know they might only be able to provide really one meal a day, but you as a visitor, they will want to give too.
Yeah.
So I've always learned I carry a backpack, and it's always full of goodies.
Oh no.
Not Western goodies, particularly not out in that sort of area, because it's not. I don't consider that balanced.
Right. So what do you give them?
Well, I'll take things like rice and fruit and vegetables.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I'm aware that they're going to use their last of what they've got to give me a nice meal. And they'll use the best of what they've got. And so I can leave a nice package of rice, some nice fruit and vegetables that, you know, might be fruit and vegetables that they can't get there in that area. So it's a nice gift for them.
Yeah. No, that's beautiful. So... But what I'm interested in is you go to these smaller villages and you talk to the people. What is the reality that they're living? Are they religious? Are they philosophical? Do they have dreams to leave the villages and go to the U.S. or dreams to be doctors and teachers? What's the vision and what do they want in their lives, some of the people?
You know, Alan, it's so similar to anywhere in the world.
Right.
You know, I mean, some of them obviously don't have the knowledge of opportunities in the more very remote areas, but they still have the desires of, you know, some of the younger ones, especially the young men, wanting to go and join the army, wanting to go to the big city, wanting to start a business. You know, very similar to any, you know, country town, basically. You know, there is more education now in Nepal since the 70s. There's been the start of education. As a consequence, more people have shifted to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And the younger people are starting more businesses, and they're going back and forth to the village. So there's more knowledge and sharing and information that's happening. And it's an interesting process to watch, because there is also this Western influence.
Yeah.
As the media comes in,
right?
You know, which is a combination of television. Radios have come down from China, so everywhere in the remote areas have radios, and also televisions are very cheap. Although there's often not reception in the remote areas, but these influences. So you do have those with the dreams of the U.S. being the golden dream, and you know, my heart sinks a bit, because I feel what's conveyed on the television is a very different picture.
Right.
I helped a Nepali friend come to Europe last year, partly because he really had, it was such a dream. He was going to make it happen and probably get his family in debt. So a few of us, a few Western people, we put him together and we paid his ticket and we set up places for him to stay. And he had an amazing journey. And he went home and he went, I had no idea it was like that. He says, I'm so glad to be back in Nepal.
What was his
He said, the waste. And one of the most interesting things, which I think you'll really enjoy to hear, is that people don't connect. He called me up one night. It was about 11 o'clock at night. And he snuck into the kitchen and called on the telephone of people he was staying at. And he said, I'm so lonely. I'm so scared. And I said, what's up? He said, everyone's gone to their room and I'm in this big room all on my own. And it just clicked for me. You know, in Nepal, they're very tactile. They're very together. They you know, you don't have a bed on your own.
Right.
You sleep all lying together.
And you miss it, I suppose. And
exactly, he missed it. But the thing he noticed is that people didn't talk to one another.
Mm.
And that he met these different people in Europe that, you know, had arguments with their parents and, you know, weren't talking to them and, you know, weren't really taking care of their money or working or the waste of food and the waste of resources. And it was shocking, utterly shocking to him.
Wow. Be a great movie to sort of follow someone around from their the idealization of the West to the reality of the West and just kind of see. So then talk about, then sometimes you bring friends over mm-hmm. with you, and that's sort of education for them. I mean, what happens with that, and how can people do that even?
Well, the first sort of few times it happened was very spontaneous.
Yeah.
You know, for quite some years I kept it quite private, what I was doing in Nepal, and then I sort of mentioned it to a few friends, and then one of them spontaneously decided to come, and then she ended up bringing two others.
Mm.
And it was very nourishing for me to actually, you know, open up and have my friends know what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
And it actually really created the bigger picture of me sharing to the wider world, the globe, you know, that you can make a difference. And now what I've actually done, and again, people can get information on the website, www.handswithhands.org, of what I'm calling inspirational charity treks, which are done twice a year. Because Nepal is famous for its magnificent...
Oh, yeah.
You know, not treks. You've got these mountains that have a presence.
I mean, oh, yeah, the rooftop of the world.
And there's, you know,
the Himalayas.
I think there's no coincidence that, you know, many of the sages have supposedly, you know,
right.
sat in the caves in the, you know, the Himalayas.
Mm.
There's an energy there.
Uh-huh.
And it supports stillness.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, just walking, you know, one step at a time up the mountain
uh-huh.
is a meditation in itself. And we combine the trek with visiting different projects, orphanages,
oh,
hospital projects, villages, so the people can see for themselves what you can do. And the Nepali people are very proud to, and happy to show, you know, what they're doing, because it's them doing it. I'm a support. I'm not doing it. They're doing it. And I'm with them.
Mm.
I'm their friend, you know, being a help, being a hand that sort of says, here's my hand. I've got knowledge and I've got... and finances that can help you. Let's work together.
Huh. And so then let's talk about the microcredit mm-hmm. thing that you study, because
mm-hmm.
I think that could be a very big inspiration to many people listening in many
Absolutely.
Areas.
Absolutely.
What is it? I know you went to a conference in New York. I saw you there.
Microcredit, it's a very simple practice, and it was developed by a fellow called Mohammed Yunus,
uh-huh.
who got the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006. And extraordinary man. If anyone had the opportunity to hear him speak, do so.
What's his name again?
Mohammed Yunus.
Yunus. Y-A-N-N-I.
Y-U-N-N-U-S, I think
Okay.
He's a Bangladeshi man, and he has set up an organization called the Grameen Bank, which is now most famous for microcredit.
Uh-huh.
But the principle of microcredit is giving a small loan between $100 and $150 generally,
uh-huh.
at least initially, and charging some interest.
Mm-hmm.
It's to give the receiver, be it someone in a, you know, remote area or mm-hmm. even in a city area, in who's, but someone in poverty,
right?
Someone who wouldn't be able to get, you know, probably even enter a bank, let alone take a loan, and whose only other option of borrowing money is usually through loan sharks, and they're
uh-huh.
usually rates at between 50% to 80%. And this is an opportunity for them to have a loan, and also the program, not only our program, but most microcredit programs
uh-huh.
are about supporting about education. The loan officer operates not only as someone who facilitates the handling of the money
mm-hmm.
and the repayment of the loan, but also supports the person to identify a potential capital-producing or income-producing prospect.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of ours include buying of goats and then breeding them so they have more goats, or chickens, or pigs.
So you'd make a loan to a farmer, you're saying?
Usually it's not to a farmer. Usually they don't even have a farm.
Oh.
These are, we work actually all with women.
Uh-huh.
Not all of microcredit's with women, although predominantly in the area of microcredit, it does seem to end up with the women because they're the ones doing most of the work in the poverty areas.
So someone, like you wouldn't do it, there's an organization that does microcredit.
No, it's my friend Dependra and I. We identified someone who had some experience in microcredit down in a remote area nearby Chitwan in the south of Nepal.
Uh-huh.
We talked to this person so that they were on the same wavelength as us because we wanted the program to be, you know, really also support community building and we wanted to be in tune.
Uh-huh.
And then Dependra and the loan officer went to the first village and they had a discussion with the village committee and said, this is what we would like to propose.
Uh-huh.
We would like to, you know, invite, you know, 25 women from your village to be part of this microcredit program.
Uh-huh.
And so we spent, not we, but we employed somebody who does specific training to come and spend a day in the village and just give a discussion on what is microcredit. What is it? What are the benefits? How does it work? From that, we had more than 25 women want to be involved. And then that started then a relationship. The loan officer would go out once a week and meet with the women.
Right.
And slowly, slowly, each one has taken a loan. Now, it took nearly 12 months for all of them to take a loan. They weren't ready straight away.
Uh-huh. So they took a loan of $100 or $150 to buy
a goat or buying chickens or buying pigs.
Yeah.
And these situations, I mean, the loan would be for, you know, a period of 8 months or 12 months or 6 months, depending on the woman's situation.
Right.
So for each woman, it's different, and the loan officer works one-on-one with each one to help them feel confident that they actually have the right situation that's going to work for them.
I see. So they help. So then they sort of, and then do they have to pay this back?
And they pay it back, and they have a little passbook, and they learn about money. They learn about it. They learn about. Not only does the microcredit give them the loan, but it teaches them about building a business, about how to earn income, to understand about the principles of loaning money and making money and what is profit. So we also, in our particular program, we also, actually it was on the request of the women, offer a literacy program as well.
Uh-huh.
And now we now do that with all of our microcredit programs.
So it's education, and then you're changing, you're sort of, I mean, you know, you, but the microcredit programs are changing the base level of living in these communities by educating women, and I mean the simple life in a way is also changing.
Well, it's not so much the simple life still stays very much the same. It's not that they, but these are giving the people in the more extreme levels of poverty the opportunity that, you know, people might be getting in a neighboring village that have just had more. More resources, for instance.
No, I mean, it's good. I mean, I know. I mean, it's great. And it does seem like as people get more educated, they want more. You know, they want more. And that's just how the world is. We're here to lift everyone up and not keep them poor, even though I'm sure there are governments that want to keep people poor, right?
I'm sure that probably is true. But you're right in that sense that it is about uplifting, and I think we're on a global level, as what you're finding out through the different people you're meeting and talking to on this program, is there is an uplifting generally.
Yeah.
And, you know, as, I mean, microcredit is an amazing tool in this conference that you mentioned where we last met in New York. It was on Wall Street. It was sponsored by Goldman Sachs and the Women's World Bank. And, you know, it really showed to me the exponential growth of this area of microcredit in the world.
Well, I don't understand why Goldman Saks would be interested in like $100 loans here and there. I mean, what's the connection to the big business with these small loans?
Well, when you have, you know, if you talk about a million loans, or even if you talk just about 100,000 loans of $100, you're talking $1 million. So, you know, and literally now there is hundreds of millions of dollars on the ground in microcredit all around the world.
Oh.
You know, from India, Bangladesh, Nepal, parts of Africa, Mongolia, South America, Mexico. Even in the U.S. and even in England, there are microcredit programs for the urban poverty people.
How much interest do people have to pay with these microcredits?
It depends on the organization. We're charging between 9 and 12% for what we're doing. Some organizations I know do charge quite a lot more, but they do charge substantially less than the loan sharks in the area.
Because, you know, interest is a whole weird thing anyway that they don't quite get. I don't think it's necessary. And,
well, there is the wages of the loan officers to pay, which is why the interest is charged to create sustainability. The loan is repaid and it's back in the pot for more loans to come out. But somewhere the wages for, you know, these are indigenous people. These are local people who were paying for the literacy course, who were paying for the loan officers. And it has to be, it works much better when it's local people.
Okay, because I'm just a little suspicious because these big companies are involved. In the beginning of the program, we talked about giving back. So are these companies doing it to make a profit, or are they doing it to give back and help lift the planet?
I fully understand your skepticism. I went to New York with that.
Right.
And to be honest, I was very pleasantly surprised that that all but one person I met in that environment was about giving back.
It is about giving back.
Really amazing people. There is a financial incentive. You know, if you talk to any, you know, businessman who's or woman who's really being self-made, and you know, they want to invest in a project that's you know, it's gonna work.
Yeah.
So this is why they're attracted to microcredit.
How can people find out more? Well, go ahead. What were you saying?
It's not just so much that they're going to make a profit on it. They just see it as a sensible way to give back.
And so how can people find out more about what microcredit's about?
If you Google microcredit, you'll get oodles of information.
Is this sort of a global revolution, microcredit?
It's a fantastic global revolution. And this is an interesting one. Now, don't quote me on my facts here, because I'm not 100%. But there is something like the women of the world do something like 80% of the work in the world.
What are the men doing?
Sitting back having good time. And the women do 50% of the food production in the world. They earn less than 15% of the income in the world, and they own less than 1% of the capital.
They own what? Less than 1%?
Less than 1%. Now, I might not be 100% correct on my
right,
numbers,
but
there.
Something,
but it's pretty close
to
that.
It's pretty extreme, yeah.
Now, at the moment, there's about 80 to 85% of the recipients of microcredit are women. And I find it a very interesting turnaround that now that there is this big money, which is coming predominantly actually from the male development, is actually now coming to support women coming into empowerment, coming into their strength, coming into education, coming into their creativity, because that's what small businesses are.
Yeah.
You know, it's their creativity. It's their, it's educating them to realize that they can make a difference.
Is this why the guy won the Nobel Peace Prize?
Absolutely.
For just this very thing?
More from the point of view that the empowerment and it's bringing people, as you say, to another level of consciousness. So if people are engaged in their creativity and possibility, they're not going to be thinking about, you know, causing mischief and uprisings, because they're going to want to work together. They're going to want to support each other, because otherwise their business isn't going to work.
Right. And so we really start to build a global village.
And it is a global village in that way.
Yeah.
And it's about one-on-one support, and it's about working together. So these microcredit pods, most of the microcredit organizations work in a more community-based orientation, that the women, or not just the women, but the recipients of the loans are often co-responsible for each other's loans. And this isn't every model, but a lot of the models are. We operate that way, and we break them down into groups of five where they're each co-responsible. And this creates support.
So does this go with the orphanages? How is this microcredit stuff in Nepal particularly work with what you're doing with the orphanages?
It's not directly related at all.
It's just another program.
The only common bond is my friend Dipendra, who was the initiator of the orphanages. It was his idea about the self-sustaining model. When I told him about microcredit and what I'd heard, he was very enthusiastic, and he said, "Oh, let's start, let's do one." And I went, "Sure, let's go for it."
And what did you do?
We literally he contacted a friend that he knew had some experience in microcredit down in Chitwan, and then he and this friend went to the village and talked to them, and we started from there.
You started to give loans to people.
We started in one village with 25 women, and we're now about to start in the fourth village.
Did you give 25 loans of like 100?
Yes, but not all at the same time.
You said he over
a course. The women time to have the confidence that it felt right for them to do that.
And how are these women, because they had to be changed because it's something totally new in a tradition that's probably, 3,000-4,000 years old, right? It's sort of the end of a tradition in a good way because, as we hear, the old doesn't really work because it doesn't support evolution. But it's the end of something as these women come into their own ability. How have the women themselves changed because of this?
It's been very touching, Ellen. When I was there recently, I was really struck by their gratefulness. That what they were sharing with me was, at first they couldn't get why, and they knew that I was a part of the support, and they were speaking directly to me and to Dipendra. And they sort of said to us, we couldn't get at first why you wanted to help us. It's like we kept looking. We were suspicious of you. And we said, now we've met you three times and we've known you for 2 years. And things have gotten better for us. And then one of the women came out and she showed me her notebook from the literacy program. And it was full with this beautiful handwriting.
Wow.
Or Nepali, not English. And they're learning about sums and mathematics. And she said, and she had tears in her eyes and she was thrusting the book under my nose. See, and look, I can sign my name. And before they only could do thumbprint, that's a sense of empowerment. And the other thing they shared is that before, that they wouldn't have been allowed in a bank. And I didn't realize this. And they said, this is one of the reasons, they said to me, this is one of the reasons we were suspicious because we aren't even allowed in a bank. We're considered untouchable. And you've come out and you want to help us. And you have. And then they showed us the goats, and they showed us the chickens, and they showed, we ended up having a feast, which is a little interesting because I'm vegetarian, so I have to make it really clear.
Do they eat in Nepal? I guess they do.
Not much, but they do. It's considered a... They don't eat cow because mostly they're Hindu, but they eat goat and chicken, but only on special occasions. Mostly it's vegetarian.
You know, the surprise about... Why do you want to give meat? That's sort of common. That's what we're seeing here. People often say, well, why am I getting all the... I say that, It's like, it's a human thing,
I think it is, to receive unconditional giving is still quite a rarity on the planet.
But, Marshall Rosenberg, who started nonviolent communication, his work, he says there's a human need to give to other people. That's a need, not
Absolutely.
Just to receive love, but we have a need to give and serve people.
And I think this is to me, is a very important part of what I would love your listeners to connect with is, as you say, we have this need. And in that giving, when we respond to that need, we receive so much, and that's what people, I don't think they really get yet, Alan.
Well, they don't get it because it hasn't been... In a capitalistic society, what's good? What can I get? Can I get? We don't have an understanding of these underlying human needs that we all have to just give. We have that.
Exactly. This is why I've set up the volunteer program.
To
give people an opportunity. You can come for a month. Just to have an opportunity to just do something different.
Yeah, and I think it's reflective, hopefully, of the change of consciousness that's coming to the planet. Do you get that?
I think that's why I feel, inspired in what I'm doing and touched. Mm-hmm. because I feel this whole journey in Nepal for me on a personal level feels like I've been in training.
Yeah.
It's helped me to see more about this so I can share more with others.
Mm.
And as you know, I've been very committed to the whole topic of consciousness.
Yeah.
For many years.
Both of us, we grew up on it.
Pretty much. So for me, you know, my hope or my wish or my gut feeling is we are in a process of change, and you know, and as we both know, there are, you know, many things happening on the planet that are pretty messy and
yeah.
you know, might get more messy.
It might get more messy, but what the image I get, or did you have something else?
Well, I was just going to say, when we really know how to give, we're going to be there for one another.
Yeah.
We're going to, as you say, create a new reality
yeah.
because we've already learned how to give.
Mm.
You know, those of us who are practiced in it, we're going to be there to support others.
Mm. Yeah, and also, I think receiving as well.
Absolutely.
We have also here to receive, and that's also a hard thing. Well, we can't give and we can't receive. No wonder we're stuck in a mess. But I see the image I got with you doing these programs and many people is as if there's like a wound on the planet, and these people going and forming is like a, sort of like a healing in separate parts, like a scab forming on a wound, and eventually, you know, it comes together and there's a healing as people start to give relief to people who are our brothers and sisters, and we start to bring everyone to sort of the same level of consciousness in a way. There's a healing on the planet itself of this wounded humanity.
I mean, I connect with the imagery that you say. I don't connect so much with the woundedness.
Well, it's a mess, like you said.
It's a mess, but, but the thing that I feel very passionately about is many of these people in the poverty situation mm-hmm. have actually a lot more to give us. You know, in our so-called sophisticated Western environment.
Mm.
And I think that's a really important part. So if people take away the image that we need to, you know, take care of the homeless and the wounded and, you know, these poor people, we're going to miss the point.
So what do they have to... you sort of mentioned it before.
They've got their sense of community. They've got a life. They're living.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're got the spark in their eyes. They've got nothing, and they've got everything.
Right, just what you described, that woman coming over and said, look, I signed my name.
Exactly.
They're, like, alive with that enthusiasm.
And they've got that joy, and you know, so many people have got so much here in the West.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you and I both know people who are extremely wealthy and are not happy.
Yeah.
They have everything they can think of and more money than they could ever spend, but they don't have that spark in their eye.
Well, then how can we start a cultural exchange program where they do give us? How can they give
That's
us?
That's my volunteer program.
So people
and,
come...
And also the inspirational charity trek, because you go out and you walk in the villages. You know, you're out in the Himalayas, you're staying at lodges run by Nepali people. You get to just see how simple their life is. And how wonderful that can be. You know, that we have so much extra stuff because we think we need it. We need a new car, we need a new mobile phone.
Uh-huh.
I need to see the things that make them laugh and the joy and the, what I call the natural spirituality.
Mm.
The enjoyment of being alive.
Does that not change when they get into microfinances and business? Is there a way of keeping that, you feel?
Well, I feel it's more intrinsic in their culture.
Mm.
So, I think this is where there's a balance. So if we try and make them just into capitalism, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
And this is why, as you say, the cultural exchange program, and this is something I'm passionate about, and this is, you know, why I've set up an organization to help with the education.
Right.
More educating the Western people, to be honest.
To be honest in that.
To help them to see more about themselves and what they're doing when they so-called give.
Uh-huh, to see where they're giving it from.
Where they're giving it from, but also what are they receiving?
Uh-huh.
To support them to realize that, and I, in an interview, whenever anyone, you know, volunteers,
uh-huh.
I'm talking to them about, you know, to go with an open mind.
Uh-huh.
Go with the fact that you've got your upbringing, your knowledge, your uh-huh. education, and
uh-huh.
your view on life. Uh-huh. But go with an open mind. What are you also going to get there?
I think that's very important. So it's not just here I'm giving the money. It's like,
absolutely
like
not.
You did to these doctors who wanted to build the hospital, you brought them over there.
That's
and
right.
And what did they get, these people who wanted to, because they wanted to give, but what did they come away with?
They came away with feeling really touched.
Mm.
I mean, one thing about the Nepali people, when they do celebration, they do it wonderfully.
Mm.
And you can't escape.
Mm.
And you get covered in red ticker and flower lace, and you're celebrated.
Mm.
You know, really, it's an amazing, it's something I can't really convey in words, but you're celebrated. So they came away with this sense of being honored, being respected. But more than that, they came away with realizing that these are people.
Mm.
You know, they're creative, they're intelligent, they might lack certain things. You know, they might lack certain financial things, but they don't lack spirit. They don't lack initiative. They don't lack creativity. They don't lack desire. They don't lack imagination.
Right.
They don't lack the sense of, we want to have ourselves. We want to have more in our life. We want to really support our community.
They can teach us to be more human in a sense where we've lost.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let me just ask you, because we're just sort of running out of time, and we have a few more minutes. But
it's been great, Alan.
Yes, thank you. I've been talking to Kira Kay here, who has the organization Hands with Hands. .com and
.org,
handswithhands.org, Kira Kay. But no, on a personal level, you know, you've lived with the rich and famous, let's say. And then you've been all over the world. You're from Australia originally, Western Australia, and you've lived with the very poor, and you've been, you know, there in the poverty. And so you see this, the most extreme range of humanity. So what do you do with it? How does that touch you as far as the human experience? What is to be here incarnate? You know, what do you get from that huge range that you've experienced? Do you know what I'm asking?
I do, Ellen. And actually for me, it's been amazing. I feel very gifted and blessed that I actually have seen both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And one's not better than the other.
Mm. In what way? How do you? Because you know, there's people who are loved by millions, billions, and then you're living with these people who probably haven't seen more than their village. You know, it's like.
But in one sense, there's a quality there that's amazing and touching, and the sensitivity with that, and you know, and it comes back to the basic point: we're all people.
Yeah.
You know, the person, you know, I'm just flashing on the picture of this one woman in this tiny little shack and her so pridefully inviting me in and showing me where she sleeps and where her goats sleep. I mean, literally, this shack wasn't bigger than a king-size bed. And I was so touched. And yet, when I'm with, you know, some of the rich and famous people and the, you know, the successful people,
yeah.
and the world, you know, they're humanity. They're humans and they're... You know, their joys, their pains. In one sense, on a material level, yes, there's this huge difference. On a human level, they're the same.
I get that. I thank you, because I get that. Yeah, it's like, look how I've decorated my fancy bedroom. It's
exactly.
The same. It's the same emotion as, look what I did with my little shack.
Exactly.
And that's what's beautiful. It's not to judge one end of the spectrum versus the other. It's all humanity, and it's all the same experience in a way, you know?
From the internal level, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, the outer, of course, is a bit different.
Yeah,
and, you know, straw mat versus a nice, comfortable mattress is, you know, two different realities to sleep on.
It is, but it's...
But the people you meet in both places, they're people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That, to me, says it all.
And that's sort of what I was curious about, because you've met the range of humanity... And you've seen that it's all the same. It's all people experiencing emotion and feeling and trying to live their life in the best way they know how.
And it makes me more certain of the fact that I just love people.
Yeah. Yeah, and you are doing an amazing thing. I mean, I see you just light up when you talk about this, as opposed to your own dramas or whatever. But when you talk about giving back, there's a your face looks different. There's a whole nother energy about you. Really, I've never
Thank
seen
you.
This part of you come forward, and I've known you for, 15 years?
It's been a huge gift in my life, Alan, and it's had a much deeper personal shifting level for me because, exactly as you say, my dramas have become insignificant.
Right.
You know, and on a personal consciousness level, this choice to give back more and to really look at humanity, at the extremes of humanity, and what can I do has helped me to disconnect from the mind crap and just to get more real, like what's important.
Yeah.
You know, really, what's important?
What is important?
and you know, the stories in my mind are not important. Mm. Being here with this person and connecting with them, and what is it that I can give with them, and what can I receive from them? Because when I receive them, when I hear their story, when I am connecting with them, you know, that there's something that they're experiencing because I'm listening, I'm being there.
And you're experiencing life through them, through there.
Absolutely.
Through there. And that's what I think really the purpose of incarnation in human form is, to gather experience and feeling and emotion and to then share it with each other.
So what I encourage all of your listeners out there is just to look for something in your life, even if it's your next door neighbor, you know, taking their dog for a walk. Just even if it's just something really small, do something. Make a difference because you can.
And not to do it, but it feels really good.
It can be life-changing.
But it feels good to the giver. I mean, you make a difference with someone, and it's like, wow. You know, I get the example, just stopping and asking someone for directions if you're lost in the car. The person you ask feels really good if they know where they're going. It's like, it makes them feel good in order to give back, and it's like, you've needed something, they've needed something, and this is humanity coming together.
That's right. We need one another.
We need, and I think things are changing. I think we are coming into a new reality.
Well, Alan, good on you for creating a program like this where you keep sharing about the possibility of new realities.
Thank you, Kira Kay. I'm talking to Kira Kay. And just a little rundown in your organization, where to contact you again.
Yep, they can contact me on www.handswithhands.org. All the contact information's on there, as well as some basic information about the projects in Nepal and the volunteering.
And the projects just range from, just outline
projects that? Range from the Self-Sustaining Children Home, which is an innovative program for orphanages. It involves hospital projects, it involves education initiatives, and it involves microcredit. I think I've covered it all. Anyway, more information on the website.
Right. No, I'll check the web. No, I'm just still, overwhelmed by one person saying, I want to do something to give back and creating this organization. It's fantastic.
Well, I've had a lot of help from my friends, all my Nepali friends and some other friends who've supported and encouraged me and encouraged me more to follow my feeling, to follow that impulse. And even when I've been there in Nepal and gone, what am I doing here? You know, for them to be on the other end of the phone and say, it's okay. You're feeling good there? Fine.
Right. And I think because of your example, and I think it will, more people will do that and say, you know, I'm just going to go. I'm just going to go and help people.
Wherever it is.
Yeah. Because that actually does change the vibration of the planet, that whole way of looking at things and your life and feeling a connection to somebody else and saying, by giving your connection and the two create another vibration.
That's right.
Yeah, and I think we're really coming together as a planet. I see a new reality.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you so much. And you're going to Nepal soon?
I'll be there in October, November.
Okay, to set up another orphanage?
Yes, we've got the fourth orphanage. It'll be underway, so I'm going to go and be there and be a part of that.
And all around Kathmandu or where?
No, they're scattered all over in Nepal. We try and decentralize them.
Oh, nice. So, thank you so much for being a guest here on New Realities.
Thanks, Alan.
Yeah, and I'll be in touch with you and maybe update, and maybe, you know, you can come back and when you get back, or even if you're in England, I can call you from
Wonderful.
England.
Wonderful. Be happy to have another chat.
Yeah, and hopefully people will contact Kira and just find out about what's happening and maybe go on one of their visitors programs or find your own initiative. I'm interested to hear about the kind of inspirations people have from listening to a program like this and see where they are giving back. And I really want to thank, you know, Don at bbsradio.com for, like, giving this opportunity to put this information out there. And bbsradio.com is a great place to get this alternative information, because you're not really going to see this on the front page of a newspaper, how to give back like this, because they're concerned about something else. So This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. And if you want to reach me, my email is newrealities@earthlink.net. I have a website, newrealities.tv. You can also watch my program, New Realities, television every Monday night at mnn.org, 9 p.m. New York time, Monday nights. And I'm open to feedback. I'm curious about what people think about these programs. Check the archives on BBS Radio for the last few weeks. A lot of programs similar to this. And I want to thank everyone for listening. And it's really been a great eye-opener to be here with Kira Kay, my guest for the night. And listen next week, same time, same place. Thank you very much. And I'll just end with this song that we came in with by Jimmy Cliff, which was another place in the world that really was transformed, Jamaica. So thank you for listening, and I'll hear from you next week. Okay, thank you for listening. Good night.